You're tuned to My Radio at StanPelke.com. This is Stan Pelke, your host, and I am so pleased you've joined me for the 20th podcast featuring readings from my original novel, Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. This episode consists of part 2 of chapter 10. If you are enjoying these podcasts and my novel, please encourage others to join us. All episodes are currently available at StanPelke.com. And check back in May when I preview the new programming that I will launch on My Radio during the summer of 2017. A faint chime sounded above Dijsonen. He looked up and saw Butler hovering above him.
Tisk, tisk, young one. It is rude to listen to the private conversations of other units.
The spherical household management robot turned first this way, then that. Rows of lights and ocular systems rotated toward him, then angled toward the doorway, then back down the way it must have come. It floated down closer to Dijsonen.
Now move along, young master, before I summon TW6M3.
Then it rotated once more and swung into the study.
Master?
Dijsonen could hear it address Grandfather.
General Raul Dorne of the 3rd Division of the Unified Military Service, and his chief of staff, 3 junior aides, 6 of his personal guards, and 2 media assistants are awaiting you in the morning room. General Raul Dorne has an appointment with you, and you have also invited the general and his chief of staff to be your guests at dinner tonight.
Ah, yes, Dijsonen heard Grandfather say, his voice now smooth, politically savvy, artfully contented. Please signal my command squad, as well as Sergeant Kaltukoa, to join us. All will be our guests at luncheon today. We will have drinks in the morning room, then tour the west wing of the laboratory complex, then return to the minor function hall for the lunch buffet.
Yes, master.
Oh, and Butler?
Master?
Signal the guard commander at the laboratory complex to increase the interior security protocols between the central processing hub and the east wing. I do not want any of the general's assistants to go snooping accidentally or purposefully.
Yes, master. Colonel Tidij Gorat, sir, will you be joining us for drinks and lunch?
For lunch, yes, Butler. But with my father's permission, I need to spend a few minutes responding to several electrograms. And now Dijsonen had to dash. He did not want them to know he had been listening. Butler would not reveal that he had been there. But Dijsonen did not want his father to see him, not after repeated warnings to stop listening in on Grandfather's activities. It was too far down the corridor to the servants' stairwell that led up to his own suite of bedroom, study, and gymnasium, so Dijsonen ducked into his father's suite of rooms, which were on this same lower-level corridor. He moved quickly through the outer sitting room, convinced that Father would complete his communications work from the comfort of one of the soft armchairs in that room, and then dashed into his father's grand bedroom. When he realized from the sound of his father's footfalls that Tidij Gorat was going to come into the bedroom, Dijsonen slid under his father's large and luxurious bed. This had become a favorite hiding place for Dijsonen during the past several months. Butler never looked for him down here, and TW6's mainframe never projected its interface onto the floor. Dijsonen held his breath to try to slow his heart, then took a few quick gulps as the sound of his father's boots striding across the highly polished wooden walkways outside in the sitting room became ever louder. The colonel entered the bedroom, stopped, turned and looked back out into the sitting room, and scanned the walls and ceilings in both rooms to make certain none of his father's security spiders were scurrying along the ceiling. Then he shut and locked the inner door to his bedroom. Dijsonen could see most of his father's tall form as he walked over to his large closet and pulled open the double doors. Numerous identical pilots' uniforms hung along the left side of the closet, while two military dress uniforms were hung nearest the doors to the right side, before the rest of his father's civilian garments crowded along beside them ever deeper into the closet. Although he was not quite 10, Dijsonen had a clear understanding of the importance of his father in the service and of his outstanding accomplishments as a great pilot, an experienced military leader, and one of the most respected naval officers in the solar system. He had been offered even more honors and opportunities, but Tidij Gorat had turned them down in favor of greater freedom to come and go so that he could remain a part of Grandfather's world. Tidij Gorat paused once more, turned and glanced at the door, then bent down and drew a small metal trunk from the floor behind and beneath the pilot's uniforms. He tapped a quick security code into the lock and swung the lid open. He drew out a smallish touchpad and carried it to the door. A quick press of a tiny switch, and the touchpad adhered to the back of the door. He pressed his whole palm onto the pad's surface. A faint green light scanned it, then a quiet voice requested a retinal scan. The colonel leaned over until his right eye was only centimeters from the pad. A red flash illuminated the room. Then the touchpad burst into life. Dijsonen had been surrounded by some of the most sophisticated machines, artificial intelligence objects, and household robots for his entire life. But he had never seen anything like this before. In appearance, it might have been an old, out-of-date personal wireless notepad, or an even older, antique, oversized cellulophoner. Grandfather still enjoyed working with some of these sorts of things, even reading books off tiny flat-screen readers rather than using direct neural downloads. But the apps that popped up on the touchscreen device looked, even at this distance, to be something far different. Several had even generated three-dimensional light-screen interfaces of such refinement and subtlety that they would have made Grandfather envious. Now his father stepped back and began to whisper interface with the machine, Dijsonen not only failed to recognize the words, he did not recognize the language, and he already spoke six of those fluently. The machine chirped back at his father, then flooded the room with light beams. "It's searching for listening devices," Dijsonen whispered to himself. Dijsonen blinked five times and activated a bio-reading dampening field in one of the cranial implants in his head. It was time to test the software upgrades he had recently finished, but had not yet tested against Butler and TW6. No one knew about his attempts to expand on one of Grandfather's own security applications. He would know in a moment if the upgrades worked. Dijsonen held his breath as the light beams poured over the bed and crept along the floor just inches from his hiding place. And then the light beams went out. The machine on the door had registered the room as clean, and it then began to emit a soft, modulating pitch sequence. Dijsonen knew that sound. Grandfather regularly set up similar communications dampening fields during their family dinners in the private dining hall. Satisfied with his security arrangements, the colonel walked back to the closet and moved deeper into the narrow space. This time he reached up to a shelf above a row of running suits and pulled down a thin, leather-bound book. This was something truly unusual, and Dijsonen slid ever so quietly closer to the foot of the bed to see more clearly. Tidij Gorat withdrew from the closet and walked over to the small desk in the corner opposite the bed and near the entrance to the ensuite bathroom. He set the leather book down on the desk and sat down in the chair. He was motionless for several minutes, just looking at it. Then he finally lifted his right hand and placed it on the book. Dijsonen did everything he could to stifle a cry of surprise. The leather glowed with an interior light, then scanned his father's hand, just as the touchpad had done. Then the book began to split apart into sections, which reoriented themselves into a trifold design, plus base and upper cover. All surfaces then stretched out ever wider, but all parts of the object became ever thinner in precise proportion to the expanding surfaces. Then the surfaces came alive with apps and light interfaces, many of which projected outward in sophisticated holographic appendages that began to enfold the kernel. One of these appendages formed itself into what looked like a deactivated view screen. Again, a red light flashed through the room as the colonel's identity was assessed and evaluated. Then the projected view screen hologram flashed to life. Dijsonen pushed himself dangerously close to the edge of the bed. Had his father turned, he would have definitely seen the boy. A face suddenly appeared in the view screen, but it was a face the likes of which Dijsonen had never seen before. It was a completely mechanical face, but far more sophisticated than any in that solar system. "My lord," Tidij Gorat said, his eyes carefully downcast in reverence.
"It has been some time since you last reported to me, Colonel."
"I have tried to respect your wish that I remain silent these past months, lord, despite my deep desire to speak to you."
"I honor your obedience to my wishes, but something must have changed to move you to contact me,"
the face said quietly, simply, without a hint of reprimand. "Yes, lord. Several things have changed."
"Your father's researchers are getting close now?"
"Yes, lord. From what I can tell, preliminary experiments on the stealth systems have proved successful."
"We assumed that they would. Your father's mathematical intuitions are a rare gift among humans. It was only a matter of time before he worked out the primary equations. The research remains secure on site?"
"There was an attempted break-in to the relevant laboratory several days ago, my lord."
"And?"
"And we captured the intruder."
"You interrogated him?"
"Personally, lord."
"And you used the neural shredder I supplied?"
"I did, lord."
"The result?"
"He did not survive long."
"They never do. Identity?"
"Irretrievable, though I have my suspicions. A minor intelligence officer recently transferred to my division and has tried to get close to me. He asks many questions. He has even tried to get himself transferred to my command platoon. I expect the two of them may have been working together. There's also been an unusual increase in cyber attacks. But as you know, our mainframe is the most sophisticated on the planet.
Indeed, Colonel. Thanks to your brilliant upgrades, your work on that project has made me very proud. I even had difficulty breaking into the mainframe the last time I tried.
You are too kind with your praise, Lord. The machine face smiled.
Colonel, look up at me.
Titej Gorat hesitated, then obeyed. The two beings looked at each other, and there was something like affection between them. The machine continued.
So, we must assume that the senior executive ministerium may have surmised the nature of your father's latest secret research and taken more drastic steps.
That is my assumption, Lord. Though I am surprised they used a human spy and not some form of small mechanical or cybernetic reconnaissance device.
Indeed, modified security spiders would have been less costly and would have blended in more convincingly. Perhaps the attack was, how shall we say, deliberately amateurish?
I've considered that, Lord. I've wondered if the target was less the research as it exists at this stage, and more an attempt to ascertain my involvement in it.
That is a strong possibility. I know for a fact that your dual allegiance to the service and to your father is a source of conversation and frustration at very high levels of the core government.
There was a pause as the machine considered further.
We may not be able to unravel all of this immediately. I will have one of my machine agents attempt to break into relevant security records to attempt to ascertain the government's involvement. For now, Colonel, take matters into your own hands. Reinforce security around your father's estate and eliminate any risks, organic or mechanical, or both. Hunt them down across the farm and beyond, as far as you deem necessary.
As you command, Lord, Titej Gorat replied, bowing his head respectfully again.
Is there anything else, my child?
Titej Gorat leaned in close to the screen and said, Yes, there is something else, my lord.
Yes? Report.
I am being followed. For at least 2 weeks now.
Followed?
By how many agents? At least one organic that I have seen several times. I am fairly certain there is also a dedicated mechanical probe, although it has evaded my attempts to scan for it. I have begun to suspect it might have some sort of stealth or cloaking technology.
Fascinating. Please upload information regarding locations where you have seen this organic and your memories of its face.
Yes, Lord. Dijsonen stifled a gasp as his father pulled up a sleeve and peeled back a portion of his flesh to reveal a state-of-the-art neural interface and transmitter. He pressed several codes, and the system began to transmit.
Yes, I know this organic. I had considered recruiting him. He is reasonably intelligent, but disturbingly brutal, even for my needs. It is unfortunate, but he will need to be eliminated,
the machine said. Shall I take care of that, Lord?
No, Colonel. You are too important of an asset for me to risk on a minor assassination.
I will deal with this one myself.
Yes, Lord.
I shall also spend some time considering my next move in relation to your father's research. We are, of course, fascinated by the refinements he is making to these systems, as we have been with his general quantum research. But we are equally concerned by some of the questions he is asking.
I understand, Lord. I have tried to turn him from that path.
I had assumed as much, yet I know that your father has a singular attention and obsession.
My lord, I must ask you something, Titej Gorat said firmly, looking up again. My father has told me he hears voices, that he is certain they are some sort of signal projected from off-planet, and that he is evidence of that fact. Are you speaking to him, but he does not understand? The machine face frowned.
This is very interesting, and very concerning. How long has this been going on?
My lord, he only just confided this to me within the past 2 days. I am not even sure what motivated this disclosure, but his perception of these possible communications go back more than a decade. He admitted to me that that is the reason why he turned to the new research. The machine visibly stirred.
This is very disconcerting, most disconcerting indeed. No, I am not in communication with your father. My child, I would have told you if I had been, but that this possible extraplanetary communication has gone on for so long, undetected by us, is especially worrisome. I have been concerned for a number of years that your father's ability to cloak his mind was a practice that I should have stopped much sooner.
The machine smiled at Titaj Gorat as the younger man cast his eyes down again.
Do not fear, Colonel. I know that you also practice this skill, but I am better at reading you, my friend. Yet to the principal matter at hand, is it possible that the recent attempted burglary caused him to confide in you? The very act of confiding also troubles me, given the great tension between you and your father. Is it possible your planetary authorities have already breached your father's security protocols and discovered the nature of the East Wing project? Is your father preparing for his fall from grace?
I had not considered that possibility, Lord, but I do not think so. I am certain that if they knew what was being tested and built, they would have sent a robust infiltration force by now. The machine pondered for a moment.
I will have to investigate whether there has been communication from a lower-level machine interface. As you have probably ascertained, I have more than a dozen organic agents embedded within the core government itself, though none within the senior executive ministerium. That may need to change. But, Titaj Gorat, you are the only human being with whom I have direct communication who is a member of the military. And you are my most trusted agent.
For which I am honored and grateful, my lord.
You are a great asset to me, Colonel Titaj Gorat. The honor is mine.
You treat me with too much kindness, lord.
You are a man worthy of such kindness, Titaj Gorat. Indeed, if my programming allowed it, I would love you as a son.
I am... The colonel momentarily lost his voice.
The pain you suffer from the coldness of your father will pass. The vision you have of intelligence and strength, both tempered by genuine feeling, this is something toward which I wish all humanity would aspire. Do not lose faith.
There was silence between them for a moment. Then the machine asked,
Is there anything else, Colonel?
May I ask, Lord, will I be able to join you soon?
I am afraid that your news must alter my calculations and timelines, Titaj Gorat.
But my son, Lord, I need to get him away from my father, and soon.
I have no doubt that the boy's potential is very great, and he will certainly be valuable to us in the coming years. I will do what I can for you both, though it is exceptionally rare for us to elevate one so young. Allow me to consider your request further and to add that factor into my broader calculations. In the meantime, rest assured that I honor your love and compassion for your son, but I would urge you to consider modifying some of your words and behaviors, at least in public. Consider by subtle changes to your words and actions to your father and to others who are watching you that you have begun to accept that some of your ideas and desires are, in fact, old-fashioned. Convince them that you are purging yourself of some of your emotional ideals and attachments. I believe that this will draw you more deeply into your father's confidences, as well as into those of several of your superiors in the service.
The machine grew quiet again for several moments as Titaj Gorat pondered those directives. Then it said,
Do not contact me unless I signal you, Colonel. There are several critical investigations that I have to put into motion first. I must ascertain if there is another agency pursuing knowledge of your father's work. Long have I worried that a rogue business interest or a secretive branch of the Corps government's intelligence apparatus might intervene. But do not despair, no matter how long I am silent. In the meantime, I will eliminate the organic who is tracking you. I suggest that you also appropriate several of your father's security orbs and modify them to track the mechanical probe that is probably hunting you. It is possible that my assassination of the organic will cause the mechanical probe to attack. I will download instructions for the relevant software updates.
Yes, my lord. There was a rapid series of hoots and chimes from the neural interface. I have it, lord.
Excellent. Again, Tidij Gorat, do not despair. I am always closer than you think, my son.
I obey, lord. And with that, the conversation ended. The book was a book again, and Dijsonen's father sat hunched over the desk, deeply moved by the experience. Dijsonen wanted to crawl out from under the bed and run to him, but none of this made sense, and he was too afraid to move. Finally, the young officer sat up straight, then returned the book to its hiding place in the closet. He went into the lavatorium and started the personal hygiene cubicle. Once his father was safely immersed in the hygiene cubicle, Dijsonen crawled out from under the bed. He hurried over to the door, but then remembered that the touchpad's security system was still activated. The cubicle turned off, and Dijsonen threw himself back under the bed. Clean and refreshed, his father came out, pulled on one of his dress uniforms, dismantled the touchpad system, and left the room. Before Dijsonen followed, he stole into the closet and pulled out the metal trunk. As a terrible sneak, he knew all of his father's passcodes, and he quickly guessed the right one. The lid opened, and he looked inside. But only the touchpad and another uniform were inside. Yet the uniform was like none he had ever seen before, and close to its collar was a small, decorative metal badge, circles within circles within circles, each circle fashioned from a differently colored precious metal. Dijsonen gingerly touched the badge. It was hauntingly beautiful. Then he carefully folded the uniform back up and restored the trunk to its hiding place. This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.